At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
We just finished our three-part series on Oswald in Mexico City. And normally, we'd have a recap and rebuttals episode on Mexico City this week, but we're going to push that back a few weeks because my guest is going to be one of the true experts on Mexico City and the JFK assassination overall, Professor John Newman. But today, we have a very special bonus episode where we'll be looking at the current status of the JFK files that we still do not have. What is the history of those files? What files are we even talking about? What exactly does the law say? And what's next? We'll be joined by JFK Records Act expert Andrew Eiler, who has studied the law in depth and helped with litigation that's ongoing today. Coming up next on Solving JFK.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton.
Today, we're joined by Andrew Eiler. Andrew is a Canadian attorney who's become an expert on the JFK Records Act. He was part of the team that brought the current lawsuit that's pending against the Biden administration to try to get more records released, although Andrew is no longer involved with that litigation. On top of that, Mr. Eiler is a co-contributor in the book The JFK Assassination Chokeholds, and so am I. The last chapter of the book, which Andrew wrote, documents the numerous instances of obstruction of justice in the JFK assassination case over the years, and that's my favorite one in the book. Andrew, welcome to Solving JFK. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Matt. It's awesome being on your show. You are a rock star now in the JFK community. I got to congratulate you on the huge success of your show. It's awesome. I tune in every week and I look forward to your episode. So I'm really proud that that you're having me on today.
Well, thanks. What I didn't tell you guys is that Andrew is actually my brother. And and I've put him up for that. No, but thank you very much, man. I really appreciate that. And it's not for lack of effort. And even, you know, doing this 15 to 20 hours a week for the last couple of years, there's still so much that I don't know, which is just totally bonkers. But we're going to talk about a lot of stuff today that I think, you know, you're one of the best folks around to talk the JFK Records Act, Andrew. So, you know, it's been cool to, you know, it's one thing to look at the law and go, hey, they were supposed to release everything, but this is complicated and there's a lot of words and I have things to do. So let's move on. But to see someone who's an expert and who's dealt with the nitty gritty of it, actually be able to distill what's really going on, I'm looking forward to that conversation here. So today we're going to cover a lot of detailed information about the JFK Records Act to give listeners an idea of the lay of the land as it is now in the fall of 2024. We'll be covering a brief history of all the investigations, the JFK Records Act itself, the ARRB, and also the post-ARRB landscape. Then we'll look at what's next on the journey to transparency and disclosure of these files. All right, that's enough talking about it. Let's go ahead and get into it. First, the history of the investigations. So when we talk about these files that are remain classified, you know, there's a lot of different places that the files can come from. One of the sources of this material is just all of the various investigations that occurred trying to figure out what happened to President Kennedy. So we all know about the Warren Commission, and that was from November 29th, 1963, just a week after the president was assassinated, until the report came out on September 24th of 1964. And then there was the Church Committee in 1975, which was the committee in the Senate that was looking into investigative abuses in the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, and the IRS. Then in the House, you had the Pike Committee in 1975 also. And then you have President Ford, who put together the Rockefeller Commission to look into, you know, misdeeds of intelligence agencies as well. That was, of course, a presidential commission. So, and that's where we learned about MKUltra. And also, I just read today that future Vice President Dick Cheney edited the final report to omit a lot of the commission's findings in the Rockefeller Commission. So that's always fun to see the thread of history continue.
You know, Matt, I got to say, I learned something new the other day about the Rockefeller Commission. And that's, I think Ronald Reagan and Lyman Lemitzer were both on the commission. They were both commissioners on the Rockefeller Commission. You may want to check up and fact check me on that, but that was a little bit surprising to me.
Definitely surprising. So the year 1975, we have all these investigations, the Church Committee, the Pike Committee, and the Rockefeller Commission. I thought that was interesting that those were all at the same time. After that, photographic expert and JFK assassination researcher Robert Grodin, along with comedian Dick Gregory, both went on the Geraldo Show and showed the Zapruder film to the world for the first time in March of 1975. There was also all of the evidence that had been uncovered by the Church and the Pike Committee and the Rockefeller Commission. So there was, you know, a lot of, will being built up by the public to have, you know, a re-airing of the investigation into the Kennedy assassination. And so when the HSCA came along, the House Select Committee on Assassinations, that was a full reopening of the JFK assassination specifically, as well as the assassination of Martin Luther King. And there were warring factions of investigators at different times. Some of them wanted to shut down any inquiry into the idea that it wasn't Oswald acting alone. And then others really wanted to pursue any available information. There were a lot of very valuable documents that came out of the HSCA, but at the end of the day, their final determination was basically that the Warren Commission pretty much got it right, that Oswald acted alone and shot from the back, and then some random guy shot from the front and missed. They have no idea who, and they said it was a probable conspiracy. So the HSCA is actually the last time there was a governmental body tasked with investigating the case at large, as opposed to just gathering evidence. Your thoughts on the HSCA, Andrew?
I think what's come out since 1975, mainly through the ARRB, which you haven't gotten to yet, was that they suppressed a hell of a lot of information. Most importantly, the HSCA suppressed the information from a lot of the Bethesda medical and autopsy witnesses, which has just blown the roof right off of the shot from the back of the president's limousine. So I don't know. The HSC was it was formed out of public outrage, just like pretty much everything else has had to go to get anything done in the investigation.
Sure. Yeah. Well, after the HSCA, nothing happens for a while. The 80s are kind of quiet as far as the JFK assassination goes. And then Oliver Stone's famous movie JFK comes along and basically leads to an outcry for all these records to be released. And that leads directly to the JFK Records Act, which was passed in October of 1992. We'll talk more about the granular details of that law. That's really what this whole episode's about. But the key thing immediately to talk about is that this act created the ARRB, the Assassination Records Review Board. So the ARRB was empowered from 1994 until 1998, and it was basically the enforcement arm of the JFK Records Act. They conducted interviews, they could subpoena witnesses for sworn depositions, and they collected a lot of valuable evidence. Now, not in all cases were they able to get government agencies to comply. For example, they talk about in the ARRB final report that the Secret Service destroyed their files on JFK's motorcades and travel plans for the fall of 1963 after the ARRB told them to preserve it. This is in the final ARRB report, and there were no consequences to the Secret Service or anybody that was working there for just blatantly, not following the law and destroying those documents. At any rate, the goal of the ARRB wasn't to determine what happened to President Kennedy. It was really just to collect documents and preserve evidence so that people could study the case in the future. So that's pretty much, the ARRB disclosed a lot of documents. They were able to get a lot of documents declassified. And they really, I thought the interviews, some by deposition, some not by deposition. They also got documents from a lot of different people. It's very valuable information, and you've got to consider that information at least in your study of the case. It doesn't just end with the Warren report. So, what do you think about how things went under the ARRB, Andrew?
Yeah, you know what? If you get a chance to put a link in to the ARRB's final report for your viewers and listeners, it's actually worth looking at. It's a very lengthy and detailed report, but the ARRB ran out of time in 1998 when they wound up their operations. They were time limited by the statute, and as they were leaving, they basically put out a very extensive list of documents that they thought were highly relevant to the assassination case, and they strongly urged the archivist and the agencies to cough up these highly relevant documents. And to this day, we're still waiting for a lot of the agencies to comply with their duties under the act.
So the ARRB in their final report, they made a list of, hey, these specific documents we think should really be declassified, and they have not yet.
Well,
Are those
they should be produced first,
produced? I see.
as the
They were
act.
never.
They weren't even transferred over to the collection
Sure.
during the mid-90s, so they're still missing.
In other words, the ARRB believes that these documents exist, but the various agencies did never even gave the ARRB a chance to make a determination as to the status of the documents under the act.
Yeah, very shortly after the ARRB was created, there were timelines set by the statute where all of the agencies had to A, collect all of their documentations and then transmit them over to National Archives for storage and cataloging and for safekeeping. And for whatever reason, whether the agencies thought that they weren't relevant to the case or didn't fall under the JFK assassination records definition of an assassination record, a lot of files weren't transferred over to archives and therefore didn't form part of the collection that we now have.
Yeah, because there's a lot of information to parse through. And yeah, the ARRB got a lot done, but certainly it sounds like there were some things that even the ARRB wasn't shown. So, there you
Yeah,
go.
the act provided the ARRB recourse if an agency was not cooperating. The Department of Justice could be brought in to require agencies to produce the questionable documents. I don't think that ever happened. They tried to work things out, but again, the agencies ran out the clock in a lot of instances, or just outright ignored the requirements of the act, like you mentioned, the Secret Service destroying motorcade records from 1963. I mean, that's just a unlawful violation of the statute.
That's and what was shocking is it's not like, oh, we find out during the ARRB that the Secret Service destroyed them a long time ago. No, the Secret Service got notice that these files were required to be turned over, and then they said, no, we're going to destroy them. That's, that's destruction of evidence at a bare minimum. Like, that's the definition of destruction of evidence. So,
Well,
you know.
you would think it would never happen again. History has a way of repeating itself, it
Yeah.
seems.
Definitely rhymes. So let's talk about after the ARRB. So it ends in 1998, and under the JFK Records Act, everything is supposed to be turned over on October 26, 2017, unless you have really good reasons not to, which are specifically outlined in the statute. We'll talk about those. But for the most part, everything was due October 26, 2017. So there's this gap between 98 and 2017, about 19, 20 years, where there is no ARRB. The law requires periodic review, Andrew, but what did that mean in practice? Like, what was the actual status of disclosing the JFK records in between the ARRB when it ended and the October 2017 deadline?
This is the part that actually kind of excites me, Matt, I've got to say. Section 5 of the JFK Act has a section specifically about periodic review. And now I've done a lot of research on this. The periodic review under Section 5 is based on the ARRB's work. So as the ARRB was going through all of the records and saying, okay, this we can release in full. We're going to redact this section. They get the agencies to agree. No, we're going to fully withhold this record. For every single record that the ARRB made a decision on, they created what's called an Assassinations Record Review Board Final Determination Notice. Okay. And these final determination notices are required under Section 9 of the Act. I think it's 9C3B. Okay. And what it basically says is that for each postponed record, the ARRB has to put down in writing and publish the reasons for the postponement. And along with re a recommended date for periodic review or release, or a triggering event for periodic review and release. So, ideally, what that means and what should have happened is after 1998, the archivist had all of these final determination notices with the ARBs, and you're a lawyer. A agency final order actually has legal ramifications for, let's say, judicial review, right? So
Right.
these final determination notices for each and every record that was postponed would set a date or an occurrence where periodic review should have happened, okay? And what the archivist should have done is they should have either scheduled the periodic review, or they should have looked at those dates and created a diary, diarized these triggering dates to look at the reason for postponement, like a secret agent died or turned 100 years old. Whatever it was, there were triggering dates that the ARB put in place between 1998 and 2017, so that periodic review. And again, the act requires downgrading and declassification with the ultimate goal of releasing all of the records by 2017. Now, after 1998, virtually no periodic review happened by the agencies or national archives. Very, very few, if any, records were released or undeclassified after 1998. So a glut, we're talking tens of thousands of records, despite all the work that the ARRB did between 94 and 98, they just ignored all of these agency final orders. And these records just sat. And, all of the reasons for postponing them became almost irrelevant.
So The ARRB made a final, you said determination or certification, is that what it was for
Yeah,
each
they're
document?
called final determinations. And
Okay.
it's a special form. The form looks almost identical to an identification aid, which
Sure.
everyone's familiar with RIF forms or record information forms that just provide a RIF number and some basic information about the record that's being postponed or released. But the final determination forms provide like a really core bunch of critical information about the reasons for postponement, the justification, and the triggering dates for release.
And what you're exactly, and so what you're saying is the list of all of the classified documents that remain classified would have had a date associated with them for sort of when to revisit their status. Is
Yeah,
that
to
what you're saying?
revisit or release, and it
Okay.
was a date or a triggering event.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So that's, and but nevertheless, no efforts were made to comply with the law at all during that. I mean, were there any releases during that period of time?
I think there were a couple of
Okay.
very, very small releases made. And I think they were largely driven by NARA processing something. And it wasn't agency driven, if my memory serves me correctly.
Okay. So per the JFK Records Act, after this October 26, 2017 deadline, all records that are related to the assassination had to be publicly disclosed in full, unless for each record, the president certified that extremely stringent criteria for postponement was met. So what exactly is this criteria that has to be met under the law? So I know we're not following the law. But if the government was following the law, it would theoretically be possible for some files to remain classified even today, and that could be legal under the JFK Records Act. What has to be true for something to remain classified under the JFK Records Act at this point?
Section 6 of the Act provides five criteria for postponing a record. So if a government agency or office wants to postpone a record, they have to show that that record would meet one of five criteria. So the identity of a living secret agent of the CIA, a currently used method of spy craft or trade craft of the CIA or the FBI, a foreign asset of the CIA's identity, or a location of a safe house that's still in use. Those are the kind of things that would fall under the five criteria under Section 6. But really, the main section of the Act that deals with the president's ministerial duties is Section 9D1 of the Act, and that imposes very specific requirements on what the president has to do in order for a legal certification to take place. And that's to create an identification aid, to apply the Section 6 criteria to the president's determination. And the Section 6 criteria includes a standard of proof, the clear and convincing standard of proof. So there has to be demonstrable proof, clear and convincing evidence that one of the five postponement criteria is applicable to each record. And then in addition, the president has to provide written reasons for each record that he's postponing. And that never happened. None of that happened at all with either President Trump or President Biden's multiple postponements subsequent to his election in 2020.
All right, let's go to JFK Act basics. So we've talked about the history of the investigations. We talked about all the way up until, the day when it's supposed to be disclosed in October of 2017. We'll start to cover all those. We're going to go granular on what Trump did, what Biden did, where we are today. But let's talk a little bit about the basics of the act, okay? So the legal burden is on the agency to show that a document should be withheld. It's not like a FOIA request where the burden is on the person seeking the information. Another thing is the executive branch does not have control over legislative branch records under the JFK Records Act. And, you know, is that expressly enumerated in the act, Andrew, that the executive does not have control over congressional records?
Yeah, you know what? When Congress was going through the legislative process to pass this act, they made it very clear, in particularly the Senate report that attended the passage of the act. And they made sure in section, again, 9D1, the most special section of the act, Congress made sure that the president's authority to postpone records only applied to executive branch records. It's a separation of powers issue, basically. Each body, the government, has power over its own operations and actions and records. And I don't know if you mind me plugging the article I wrote for Kennedy's and King, but I mean, the title of the article is that Biden usurps Congress's control over their own records. It's a lengthy article on Kennedy's and King. I'll send you the link if you want to post it there as well. But the act makes it clear that the president has no control over congressional records and that Congress has control over their own records.
So somewhere in Congress, there's like a vault of records, and would you just go talk to Mike Johnson and see what's what? Maybe you give him some money for the Ukraine and he'll show you the records, or what? How do you?
No, they're all part of the collection. But some of the congressional records, like the Church Committee and the HSC records, remain partially or fully withheld by the president. And so, I mean, it's been pushed that Congress should run some oversight to protect their own power over their own records, right?
So these are documents that have already been handed over to the ARRB.
That's right.
And so they have possession of them. The National Archives has possession of them. And that's an executive agency, an executive branch agency. And so de facto, it's the executive branch that has control over it because the National Archives has the records.
Yeah, but they're equities.
I'm not saying legally. I'm saying just in terms of like the reality.
Yeah, no, it's an unlawful order to postpone the release of those congressional branch records by if that order is made by the president.
Right.
It's unlawful. It's ultra vires, outside of the president's power to have any say on those records, either constitutionally or via the JFK Records Act.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's kind of a bummer that they're not following the law, but you know, I guess that's what the lawsuits are about. We'll talk about
that. That's a bone of contention there. Yeah.
Get in there. Yeah. All right. One more big point, and this is, I think, really central to the whole conversation about the JFK Records Act: identification aids. So you talked about those a little bit earlier, but every single record that is withheld is supposed to have an identification aid that includes a brief description of the record, the date of the document, the originating agency or entity, the disposition of the record, and any action taken with respect to the record. And there's also supposed to be a publicly accessible directory of identification aids. This is all laid out in the statute, but those records have not been kept to the standard that's required by the act, right, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the big issues, because it's really hard to track anything in a collection if the catalog isn't properly maintained. And every time a government office or agency, including the executive office of the president, handled an assassination record or made a determination, a certification, or took any action on an assassination record, that identification aid was supposed to follow and be updated to reflect whatever action it was taken on each and every record. And there's supposed to be a comprehensive directory of those records that'll, again, show, as you've mentioned, the originating agency, the date of the document. And, you know, a lot of the identification aids will provide information about the Section 6 criteria for postponement. But since 2017, it looks like the identification aid system has been completely abandoned by the National Archivist and National Archives. And the directory, it makes no sense whatsoever. It's a convoluted mess of transparency plans by each of the agencies, and it's not held in a uniform system. The FBI has their own little spreadsheet and database of documents from the CIA. And the National Archives, if you go on the National Archives site, I think I attached a little JPEG for you that shows it's been out of commission since like 2018. So we haven't even been able to see what's actually being dealt with on a real-time basis in the JFK records collection.
All right, so I just want to parse through this just a little bit more. So the ARRB, they withhold all these, they declassify a lot of documents, but they still withhold a lot of documents. And are you saying it's true that for each document the ARRB withheld, they have the equivalent of a identification aid? I know it has a different name, ARRB certification, right? Isn't that what it was?
Well, yeah, like the ARRB either released or withheld the records or partially released the records, right?
What I'm getting at, I'm trying to get my head around, when did things start to go bad for the identification aid program? Not, you know, for because if the ARRB is following the rules,
which they did, yes,
and if so they're following the rules, it's not like there's a lot of new documents that are being generated. The documents should have already been there with the ARRB. So how do we go from having the equivalent of an identification aid for each respective document to then not have, what do they throw them away? Are they just not telling us about them, or
they're not being updated anymore? Yeah. Okay. They're not being updated. They're not being used. And so really when I was looking at this issue for researching and drafting the lawsuit, it became obvious that there was a decision made by both Presidents Trump and Biden to postpone an undetermined number of unspecified assassination records. And so when you look at the whole purpose of the act, it's to create an accountable, enforceable, catalog, directory-driven database of records with solid reasons for postponement. And come 2017, to answer your question directly, nothing really happened between 1998 and 2017 to keep that identification aid system going. There was no real major decisions happening on any of the records. There was nothing to update. But come 2017, I mean, they should have kept that identification aid system and directory of identification aids for each of the decisions that they were making with regard to these records. So when there was a holus bolus or en masse postponement of tens of thousands of records that weren't specified and the number wasn't even determined, you couldn't even get a straight number out of archives how many records they were postponing because there was no real directory and there was no system of identification aids for these records.
Was there previously a directory? Like with ARRB?
Yeah, there was a far stronger database before 2017, but they took it down from the National Archives website. You would think because they're working on it, right? But that directory never reemerged. And I know that it's been requested numerous times by researchers.
So if they were complying with the law, what that would look like if they want to withhold all these documents would be to, for each respective document that they are withholding, whether it's a partial redaction or and anything other than full disclosure, they would have to have an identification aid for each one that has a triggering event or a date to revisit, and they've just given up on that whole regime under the law. Is that basically the deal?
Yeah, so in preparation for today, I got some references to some of the new forms of directories, and National Archives has published a directory of fully withheld assassination records, and there's about 510 fully withheld records. And I look through it, it's not a perfect directory because it doesn't say who the originating agency is. I think it gives a date. I provided you a link with that withheld in full directory. It looks to me that all of the currently fully withheld records that they're declaring are based on IRS records, deeds of gift, and records that that are excluded from the Act's disclosure requirements because they were like grand jury, secret grand jury documents.
So just to tie a bow on the identification aids conversation, it's not that they are no longer, it's not that they stopped putting identification aids with new evidence as they came in. There's no new evidence. It's the same evidence it's always been. And they had it, they had the equivalent of an identification aid. They could have continued that from the ARRB. They just didn't. They just stopped doing it and did not provide transparency with regard to which specific documents were being withheld moving forward, right?
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to parse through it, but there's not a uniform system of identification aids anymore.
Okay. Let's talk about Donald Trump. Hey, get excited. People have opinions about this guy, but we're just gonna stick to the topic. All right.
You know what,
I
I gotta
yeah.
say off the top about Donald Trump, as
Here we go.
as disappointed as people were about him not following through and releasing all of the records, he released a ton of records in 2017 and in 2018, and there were some important finds in some of those records. So it wasn't all bad news. When it comes to the postponements that that Donald Trump, I don't think he had good legal advice, and I think you're going to get into the Gannon memo, which I'm happy to do.
Okay, good. Well, hey, something's better than nothing, I guess. But Trump said 5 days before the deadline, he tweeted that he was going to disclose all the files. And I think he had some sort of disclaimer, like, unless I hear some other information or something like that. I went back and looked at the tweet. It wasn't that straightforward. But he did disclose a lot of files, like you said. However, he was supposed to follow the law and have these identification aids and this granular disclosure and transparency regarding what exactly is still withheld and for what reasons and when it'll be revisited. And he didn't follow that regime at all. Big picture, he signed a memo or he signed an executive order ordering the release of some of the documents and then punting until 2018 on most of the still classified documents. And that then leads us to the Gannon memo. So I'll let you unpack this more, Andrew. But big picture, President Trump relied on a legal memo from a guy named Curtis Gannon that said that the president has the authority to issue a temporary postponement of the JFK Records Act for 6 months. Now, this is a clear violation of the law. There is nothing in the JFK Records Act that says that the president can do that. But if the government was trying to do a good job, and act in good faith, there would be individualized identification aids for each withheld document. So I just want to keep hammering that point home. We're not saying, hey, disclose everything on the 27th. We're saying, I'm sorry. We're not saying, hey, disclose everything, you know, in October 2017. We're saying, hey, follow the law and provide the transparency that the JFK Records Act requires under the law. So when this temporary postponement deadline hit in April of 2018, Trump then authorized an additional 3-year period for agencies to review the withheld documents. That gets us to 2021 and into what would be the Biden administration. Both the 6-month delay and the 3-year delay are both completely unsupported under the law. There's no basis for those, right, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, the president used Section 5G2D of the Act to justify his postponement. And again, that section of the Act starts with the word each record. And the each follows through for the rest of the part of that provision. So any certification for postponement made by the president, whether it's Trump or Biden, had to be, each document had to be certified as required by the Act. No one's trying to restrain the president's discretion, because the president has a lot of discretionary authority with regard to, okay, am I going to postpone or I'm going to release each of these records? But what the Act does is it imposes very clear ministerial duties. That's the only thing a court is going to enforce. They're not going to tell a president how to exercise presidential discretion. The courts will stay away from that like the plague. But what the courts will very reluctantly impose the court's authority on are statutory ministerial duties that clearly require certain acts to take place by a specific official in the course of exercising their duty. So this distinction between discretionary duty and ministerial duty is absolutely critical to understanding where the presidents fell down in their obligation to release these records. And when Curtis Gannon said that Section 6 stopped being of any force subsequent to October 26, 2017, he was just clearly wrong. It was improper advice to the president, and that is what led us down this path. Once we got away from the Section 6 criteria and the postponements having to be applied to each record, it was a lost cause.
Wow. So is it also true that the Gannon memo said that the president could now combine groups of documents and basically just say that a whole group is being withheld and not provide any identification aids at all?
Yeah, they kind of skirted around this issue and basically said that the records could en masse be postponed from disclosure, even though the act is pretty clear, both in Section 91 and in Section 5G2D. It makes it clear that a certification for postponement has to be on a record by record basis. And you know what? It's not just me saying this. In 1999, the CIA wrote an internal memo that said any presidential postponement needs to apply the Section 6 criteria. It needs to apply the clear and convincing evidence standard of proof on a document by document basis. It's not only the CIA that knew this back in 1999, it's also the National Archivist, who in 2018 wrote to the president and said, President Trump, any future certification for postponement needs to be based on a document by document basis. So it's National Archivist is saying this, the CIA is saying this. Why? Because that's what the statute says.
Right. It's just shocking that they could have that interpretation, because I have read the statute a couple times and it is dense, but it's clear that they're just making stuff up. It doesn't seem, there's nothing in there that says, oh, you can get a 6 month period. Oh, you can do 3 years. Oh, just keep extending it.
What you'll see in Section 12A and 12B, Section 12A says that the parts of the act that are in respect to the operation and appointments of the Assassination Records Review Board will cease to be operable law in 1998 when the review board winds up its business. But then Section 12B of the Act says all other sections of the Act not dealing with the ARB's appointment or operations shall continue until every single record in the collection is publicly disclosed. Okay. Now,
Right.
the important point in this is that the Section 6 criteria has nothing to do with the Assassination Records Review Board.
Right.
Okay. So if you understand where I'm going, Section 12B, everything keeps going that doesn't have to do with the operations and appointment of the ARB. Section
Right.
6 has nothing to do with the operations or appointment of the ARB. And so that continues to be operable law. That law is reinforced by Section 9D, that's 91, that says the president has to use Section 6 criteria for postponement for each record.
The language is just so incredibly clear. That's what's confusing to me, is because it's not like it's a close call. But at any rate, just to tie a bow on the Trump era and the JFK records, Andrew Napolitano, who is a judge, he used to be on Fox News. He has his own show. He's a pretty he's a fairly reasonable person. I don't think he's making this up. He does have a relationship with Trump. But he says that he spoke to Trump about the JFK document declassification, and that Trump said, if they showed you what they showed me, you wouldn't have released it either. Napolitano followed up, who's they? What do you mean? What did they show you? And he said, Judge, when we're not on the phone and surrounded by 15 people listening to the call, I'll tell you. So that's something. I mean, this is just pure speculation. We have no idea what any of it is. I don't know. I just thought I'd throw that fun little candy in there. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. It's a little bit hearsay, but
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating. Sure. Am I going to rely on anything that anyone, I mean,
Right.
Judge Napolitano's a judge. You got to have some faith that he's not going to make up stories.
But you also have to, still keep the idea in your head that even if you like Trump, you got to keep in your head that, look, he realizes that his base wants disclosure in this case, and so he's going to say things that make it look like that he was absolutely in favor of disclosure no matter what. So I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to know what to make of
You
it.
know what would be really fun speculation is if we're going to wonder whether any of the JFK records ended up at Mar-a-Lago and they were the subject of the search for records at Mar-a-Lago. But
Yeah,
that's even further speculation, and I don't like
for
to go
sure,
down there, but
for sure.
it's fun nonetheless.
Right. So let's go to the Biden administration. All right. So Trump admin punts to 2021. Biden basically he discloses a few files in 2021, and or declassifies a few files in 2021, and then keeps punting. Basically, gives himself more time, just like Trump was doing. Ultimately, on June 30th, 2023, Biden issued what he called a final certification under the act, and the certification said, quote, "With my final certification made in this memorandum, the last required under the act, and definitive plans for future disclosures, my administration is fulfilling the promise of transparency to the American people." So that's fun. So by not following the law and providing, identification aids, we are fulfilling the promise of transparency. So he says it's the last disclosure that's required under the act, but just like we just talked about, Section 12B of the act says that it continues to apply until the last document is disclosed. What is the, you know, the practical impact of this memo? Is it a memo or a certification or order, whatever it is? What's the practical impact of the policy from Biden on June 30th, 2023?
I don't think anyone knows what he's talking about in terms of it being his final certification. That's certainly another feat not supported by the statute. But its impact is basically he has thrown it back to the agencies to have final postponement or release authority for the records, which puts us back pre JFK Records Act in 1992. It's gone into a black hole. And, you know, it's funny, back in 2018, I don't know if I shared it with you, but I was on NARA's database going through some of the records on their spreadsheet, and I came across it had changed in 2018. The restriction section, which was what was going to trigger the release of the file, they changed that, and a whole dozens of cases, it said, quote, approval of CIA in National Archives database. So what was going to trigger the release of the files was the approval of the CIA. And when I saw this, I took a literal picture of it because I couldn't believe that's just the most flagrant violation of the JFK Records Act. The whole point of the act was to take this authority away from the executive agencies.
So tell me if I'm wrong here, but the whole point of the JFK Records Act is to disclose information that these agencies would not disclose on their own. And maybe, you know, for various reasons, who knows? We can speculate about the reasons, but the point is they were not forthcoming with the files on their own. So they had to be forced to do it by an act of Congress.
Yeah.
So now, is it fair to say that we're pretty much back to where we started before the JFK Records Act, except for we have this law that won't work, this impotent law that just, it's there. And it's kind of like a test of the rule of law, I guess. I mean, why should I respect any laws? I respect all the laws, government. Please don't investigate me.
Me too.
Good Lord. Okay. Goodness gracious. Okay. But my point is, why does the government get a pass and they don't have to follow this? And the answer someone would probably say is national security. You're not a government. Okay. But is that the rule of law? Is this the democracy that we're fighting for? Defend democracy? Is that what that is? So
it's a little bit hard to take. Yeah, it's hard to understand. It's hard to take. It's hard to look at and say, yeah, this is legitimate decision making on the part of both. Like, Congress has a responsibility here. Congress has defined oversight responsibility, both in the House and the Senate. And if they're not going to protect their own law, if they're not going to protect their own records from really overreach on the part of the executive branch, this could create a negative precedent, and it will really allow presidents to run roughshod over acts of Congress.
In terms of arguments that someone would, if I'm sitting there talking to a lawyer from the government, and they're humans, like they go to lunch and they go to the bathroom and stuff, like they're people, right? They have feelings, I would imagine. And how can they like sleep at night? No, like I guess is my question.
Well, I think once you're able to parse out the actual ministerial duties from the JFK Records Act, it becomes pretty clear what's enforceable and what's not enforceable.
Right.
And, you know, sadly, over the last year, there have been a number of negative orders there have been a number of orders that haven't really defended the JFK Records Act, and Judge Seaborg out in California stated in one of his orders that the complaint that was filed didn't allege any ministerial duties or didn't demonstrate that any ministerial duties had been contravened. I'm paraphrasing. And I think that's the crux of it. Again, the court can't enforce a discretion on the president. Court can't tell the president how to exercise his discretionary mm-hmm. duties, but it really boils down to these ministerial duties. And
all right, so
go ahead.
Let's talk about that case. So this, what's the name of the case?
It's the Mary Farrell Foundation versus Biden and the National Archives and Records Administration.
And you were involved early on in that, and then you stepped away from the team, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And the goal of this lawsuit, is it just to get the government to follow the law? I mean, because to your point, it's to get the president, National Archives, whoever, to do the thing they're supposed to do under the law, which is at a bare minimum have identification aids and a directory of identification aids, and then also stop exerting control over the congressional records. That seems to be the specific remedies that are being sought. Is that right? Am I looking
at
that
they're
right?
They're looking for additional searches of records to try to seek bringing in records that are currently not in the collection into the archives to form part of the collection. And so they've sued the National Archivist to try to extend those duties onto the National Archivist and have them enforced by the court. But yeah, I mean, the a lot of the claims have been dismissed, but what's left is largely the congressional records. And now I got to admit, the congressional records create a bit of a gray area because of the agencies do have equities within those congressional records. So the records may have been created as a result of the Church Committee or the House Select Committee or the Pike Committee. But inside of those records, there's information that's actually owned by the CIA or the FBI, and the CIA and FBI, by right of the JFK Act, have control over those equities. So are there some congressional records still being withheld? A lot of them. A lot of them are partially withheld, like we're talking probably a few thousand, and the number of redactions can be great or small in each of those records. But the real fight's probably going to be in regard to whose equities are within those records that are being redacted. So it's very finicky.
I understand. So you said that some of the claims were dismissed. What about just the idea that they haven't been following the law on identification aids or having a directory of identification aids? Is that not something that's going to come as a result of this case at this point?
I think those are still live issues. Now, the plaintiffs have appealed Judge Seaborg's ruling dismissing the bulk of the claims. So they've appealed that to the Ninth Circuit. And those matters, I believe, are they're either fully briefed or they're on their way to being fully briefed for a court of appeal case to happen in the next few months.
Okay. So a judge is a judge going to look at the Gannon memo and the Biden 2023 memo and determine the legality of those, or it's just a narrow question, narrow reading? I guess, to what extent are the policies of Trump and Biden being ruled on in this case?
Yeah, so the district court judge, if my memory serves me correctly, has denied all of the motions for injunctive relief against the president. And so the whole question of the transparency plans, I believe, has been denied at the district court level, and that's part of the appeal that's being sought in the Ninth Circuit.
And when it was denied, did the judge make a determination that, you know, the basically, oh, the act doesn't say what the clear language should. I mean, has the judge, how does the judge handle 12B, I believe it is, that says that, you know, the powers under the act continue until every last record is disclosed. Like, how do they get around that? I don't understand.
Yeah. Do you know what? I don't want to misquote or mischaracterize Judge Seaborg's ruling, but what I can certainly do is I could send you a copy. And okay. if your viewers want to take a look, I think it's not a very long decision. And there being two main orders by Judge Seaborg out in San Francisco that have dealt with this, but it... He's sadly put an end to a bunch of the allegations and complaints, but the issue of the identification aids is still a live issue. The directory of identification aids is still a live issue, and so is the congressional records. So
and
that end of the case keeps going. Maybe the Court of Appeal will take up the arguments by the plaintiffs with the rest of their complaints. But I think the real crux of the JFK Records Act is still alive, and that's the Directory of Identification Aids and Congressional Records.
Got it. And will this, the decision in the Mary Farrell case, be binding law across the country? Or is it just by circuit, or you know, could somebody else, you know, go file a lawsuit in a friendlier circuit where the judge, you know, has a bunch of Jim DiEugenio books on his bookshelf?
Yeah, you know, I think the decision of Judge Seaborg is going to have some impact on future cases. Will it be binding outside of the Ninth Circuit? No, but I think Judge Seaborg he is the senior judge in California, in the Northern District of California, and he's a very respected judge. So as you know, other judges will look at the case, and they may align their decision with Judge Seaborg depending. If a new case, alleges the same the same violations of the act, so
okay.
It's not binding, but it certainly does hold some sway on future
you would
court
just say,
decisions.
Yeah, you would say, oh, look, here's a case that's directly on point in another district. I get it. Okay,
yeah.
Persuasive authority. All right, so. Let's talk real quick, just wrapping up here. What documents are we talking about exactly? So you said 500 to 800 that have been, you know, completely withheld. What was the number you said?
Yeah, the last look that I have, there's 510 fully withheld documents. And again, all of those documents, according to NARA, are based on being like social security numbers, IRS records, which are excluded from disclosure under the act, as well as grand jury, sealed grand jury documents, mm-hmm. and deeds of gift. So all 510 are with regard to those exclusions.
And that when we talk about a document, it doesn't mean a page. It means a document could be multi-page, could be 100 pages, right?
Yeah, some records are like 200 or 300 pages long.
Sure. Okay. So there are 3,400 total records that are either redacted or have completely been withheld, according to Jefferson Morley. So that would be what, maybe 2,900 redacted in some way, 500 ballpark withheld. And Morley says that includes a 1961 memo with JFK's plan to dismantle the CIA that's been released, but it's heavily redacted. Transcripts of a confidential 1964 interview with Jackie Kennedy, where she disputed the official story. That's actually not controlled by the government. It's controlled by Carolyn Kennedy Schlossberg. There's also a personnel file of George Joannides, an undercover officer whose paid agents generated propaganda about Oswald before and after JFK was killed. And that ties into the New Orleans stuff with Carlos Bringier and with Guy Bannister, probably. I don't think everything we've talked about on Solving JFK, I think there's enough to point to Oswald and Guy Bannister. But the question is there even more? surveillance tapes of Carlos Marcello, also the closed door testimony of senior CIA officials to Senate investigators during these 1970s congressional investigations about sensitive operations involving Oswald. So there's definitely some stuff that matters. And, you know, it's given what happened with the Secret Service and them just destroying the documents. My assumption is that if there is a document that looks really, really bad for the government, they'll find a way to, you know, administrative error, clerical error. That's kind of what always happens here. And it won't exist anymore. I have no, sadly, I wish this wasn't the case, but I just don't, I don't know that there's anything that really matters that we'll ever see it. Cause I think they would not be acting in good faith. It's cause just based on their historical behavior, as you outlined in chapter 10 of the JFK assassination chokeholds. But the other thing is, I guess the flip side to, you know, oh, if they have this smoking gun document, they could just destroy it. Well, the case is so complex and so big, and there's so many documents that you have to really be an absolute top 1% expert in the world on the JFK assassination to have a clue what things are going to be incriminating or not. You'd have to, I mean, and I don't think the government is competent enough to hide that, you know, across the board. I mean, even, you know, Jefferson Morley was able to figure out based on the cryptonyms, you know, I forget exactly what it was, but the point is smart people who are obsessed with this case can piece things together that the disclosing agencies may not have even understood the significance of, because they may not have had a resident JFK assassination expert in house.
Yeah, it's amazing what the research community, with its little nuanced researchers looking at very, very specific areas, can do. And the level of expertise that is within the JFK research community, I got to say, it probably, I mean, you're going to have John Newman on your next show. The work that he's done, I mean, that's a real honor for you to get to interview John Newman. But
absolutely,
the work that he's done, I would bet he would rival any employee or analyst of the CIA looking at this stuff, and in his ability to put it into context. Right. There's probably few people on earth that could do that. And the JFK research community has these people in each little area of interest in the assassination. And so when one little bit of information comes out, and you got two or three of these people looking at it, able to make sense of it, oh, wow, that's what happened there, just from a couple of words that are unredacted. Do I think there's going to be anything mind-blowing left? Yeah, you know what? There could be, but I think we have enough information, especially that was released during the ARRB's term, that it's pretty clear. They're not just like pinpricks that have been punched in this picture. I mean, the Warren Commission story has just been blown apart over the years, and I got to say, the Chokehold's book did a great job identifying, you know, quite a few areas where it's just really indisputable at this point. We already have enough evidence. It's just a bit of a farce that the charade is continuing to go on at this stage. Is anything in the remaining withheld records? You know what? There's probably quite a bit of stuff in those IRS records for quite a few of those people, and that's hundreds and hundreds of the fully withheld records are the IRS records. And I'll tell you, there's a few people who had their hands on those IRS records, I won't mention them by name, who say, though, there's some critical stuff in those IRS records that we got to get out. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you know what, if Congress is going to pass a new act or I think we're going to get into what's going to happen next. But I mean, there is talk of yes. either amending the JFK Records Act or passing a new piece of legislation. And then, of course, you know, what happened with President Trump's announcement with Robert Kennedy right. Jr.
Let's get to that. So,
yeah.
So obviously Trump had an assassination attempt on his life. And I'll just say, let me just say really quick, because people always ask me, what do you think about the Trump assassination attempt? And I say, I'm open to the left-wing conspiracy that his ear didn't even get shot and he's fully healed. Look at that. Oh, I don't know. I'll look at it, man. I'm open to the conspiracy on the right that there's another person and there's all these kind of other shots. I will entertain information about those things because we're not being told all of the information. You know, there's in the absence of credible information, you know, non-credible information flourishes, right? So I where I'm at is I'm buying the official story for now. Sorry, everybody. I am buying the official story, but there's obvious, you know, gross negligence by the Secret Service. But the question, you know, the gross negligence isn't intentional until they knew that this guy was actually going to go up there, and we have no evidence that they're acting in concert with him. And unlike Oswald, this guy had target practice right before. So, I mean, he in fact was, you know, at the range. And so I say all that to say, I think everyone should remain open-minded to new information, but I don't have enough information one way or the other to jump on any of the conspiracy trains at this point. I'd love to see an official report come out and then dig into the information behind that. That would be good, but I'm kind of going to withhold for now, but I'm remaining open-minded. What about you, Andrew?
Yeah, I got to say, I'm a little bit disappointed in what I've seen in the investigation so far. There hasn't been a lot of forthcoming information. I could be wrong. I don't see anyone providing regular reports. Congress has tried to question key assets on the Secret Service and the FBI on what happened. So that's the only place I see credible information coming out of is the questioning in Congress. I mean, it's July 13th.
Right.
You know, August 13th. Like, what day is today? Today, we're almost 2 months.
Right.
Out from that attempt. And it's really a dead issue. It just seems to have died in, I don't know whether it's just the focus is on the election, which is convenient yeah. to make it go away, but I'm interested in understanding what happened.
Right. So to that end, Trump said that he wants to put together a new committee, some sort of new investigative body to look into his assassination attempt, to reopen the JFK assassination, and to look into the RFK assassination. So kind of like a new, I don't know if this would be like an HSCA or like a new ARRB or whatever it is, but I think anything would be welcomed. Now, I think it's fair to question, you know, is Trump actually going to do this if he gets in or not? He didn't do it the first time. And I think that's a fair point. And it's also, I think, a fair point to say, well, he's kind of got nothing to lose now. And he's going to, you know, he kind of learned his lesson the first time. But we would just have to see. I mean, I think it's a wild card.
I mean, just trying to put myself in Trump's shoes. If I became president, I would probably put in a presidential commission for the purposes of self-preservation. You know, I would want to put everyone on notice that we take these kind of things very seriously. And it is a matter of self-preservation in a lot of ways, and it should be for any president. I mean, really, if Biden imposed some kind of presidential commission, people would see that probably as a whitewash, like the more paranoid and conspiracy-minded people. So I don't know. I think what I heard is that President Trump would put in a presidential commission to investigate presidential assassinations and
Right.
to release the JFK records. But it's interesting. I think you know what the chapter 10 of Chokeholds provides a lot of parallel information to like the Secret Service operations and the investigations. And I can't take credit for much in chapter 10. Paul Blow, one of our co-authors, did the lion's share of the work on chapter 10, but it really does tie in 6 decades of obstruction of justice on the part of the government to interfere and put the boot down on a real investigation into President Kennedy's assassination. And it is like I know my name's on the chapter as a co-author, but I will say the whole concept of that really, really intrigued me, because it's so obvious from a legal standpoint that from day one, on November 22nd, 1963, there's been a concerted effort to forego actual justice in the assassination.
Yeah, and it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to read all of these anecdotes, all of these instances of basically obstruction of justice. The government not disclosing information or slowing down investigations that where there were there was someone acting in good faith to have an investigation that wanted transparency. There's some other part of the government that's trying to slow that down. So
Suppressing evidence, excluding
yeah.
witnesses, you
Right.
know, the massive number of crazy deaths that happened all around
Right.
the
Those were all.
investigations and the assassinations. It's just nuts.
Well, once this is my favorite go-to on that is once they brought out that heart attack gun at the church committee and showed it to Frank Church. You really can't. It's like, yeah, there are a lot of people do have heart attacks, but they also do have heart attack guns. So I don't know. I don't know. What are you gonna do?
But for the grace of God.
Right, exactly. So yeah, well, hey, this was a great deep dive on the JFK Records Act. I mean, I think if anything, the main takeaway for listeners is that it's not that the law that's not being followed is, hey, everything should just be declassified. It's that they're not even trying to follow the rule of the law, and there's all these specific requirements, and they're just basically turning their nose up at the law.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Matt. Yeah, you've nailed it.
That's something, man. All right, anything else before we go?
No, man, I really enjoyed being on your show. It's always good. I've enjoyed working with you over the last couple of years, and I got to congratulate you. You're doing really, really great work, and you're bringing a lot of attention to the good stuff. On the assassination. It's all high quality stuff. So I'm really
Cool.
glad that I've had a chance to work with you.
That's very kind. Thank you, Andrew. I feel the same way, man. It's been great working with you too. Well, hey, thanks for joining us. Like I said, it was a great episode. Next time on Solving JFK, we look at Oswald's life in Dallas in the fall of 1963. We'll chronicle his movements and the key developments in the last 7 weeks of the life of Lee Harvey Oswald.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.